You are about to listen to the informal comments to the media by Mr. Vitaly Churkin on the situation in Syria. Mr. Vitaly Churkin is the permanent representative of Russia to the United Nations. These comments were made before the press on the 5th of February 2016 at the UN headquarters in New York.
Thank you. I'm a little bit surprised, I must confess, that my French colleague chose to rush to the podium without caring to listen to the end of this discussion, to what Stéphane de Mistura had to say, to what members of the Security Council had to say, but, you know, you do what you have to do. Anyway, I think we had a good discussion, and I think we're encouraged that Stéphane de Mistura believes that the talks can be resumed, and that even maybe they can be resumed before February 25, the date which he set as a possible date for the resumption of the talks. We were, of course, upset that the talks after just starting were not continued. We believe that the Ariad delegation, if I may call it this way, the opposition group which presented itself as the main participant from the opposition, in our view did not really come to negotiate. They came to look for a pretext to walk out of the negotiations. We are disappointed that the opposition was not as representative as it is supposed to be, in accordance with the Geneva Communique in 2012 and Resolution 2254. We think that the talks have been weakened by the fact that Turkey went out of its way to block the participation of Syrian Kurds in those discussions. They are the part of the country, so they must be there as well. We are disappointed that what we call the Cairo-Moscow platform group of the opposition was not properly represented in Geneva. They came in, but with a status which was not fully official. So we do believe that additional work needs to be done when the talks resume to present the opposition in a more formidable, if you will, way, and in a way which would be more conducive to productive discussions with the Syrian government. Syrian government was there, and it was prepared to enter into discussions with the opposition. Now, there was also a discussion of the environment surrounding the talks, and we heard again that some things need to happen on the ground for the talks to continue. Some colleagues, yes, they did criticize Russia for continuing this bombing campaign, with the help of which the Syrian government has been able to reconquer some ground which was taken from their control by terrorists and other opposition groups. In fact, I'd like to point out that in the area of Aleppo, some sieges were lifted which have been there for a couple of years. So in the process of this offensive, in a way, some humanitarian objectives have also been achieved. However, of course, fighting is fighting, and it creates additional difficulties on the ground. My point, the point I was making in the consultations in response to that criticism, is that all those things needed to be addressed during those talks. So those people who have encouraged the opposition to essentially walk out of the text of the talks, who have been refusing our continued offers for them to arrange really practical cooperation between us and them in the situation of Syria, they do not really have much of a ground to criticize us, no moral or formal ground, if you will, to criticize us. We cannot stop this unilaterally. I mean, why don't you stop this bombing campaign? But what about the terrorists and opposition groups? Are they going to stop too? What about this American-led coalition? Are they going to stop too? My point was that all those things need to be discussed, and we are sorry that that discussion did not start in Geneva, along with the problems in the, you know, humanitarian situation, humanitarian supplies. They were on the table in Geneva, and the opposition delegation walked out. Unfortunately, it seems encouraged by some of our Western colleagues. But, you know, we are used to things in and around Syria being extremely complicated. We are not resting with our efforts to continue to do things in the proper direction in Syria. As you know, another meeting of the International Syria Support Group is planned for Munich, 11th of February. We are going to bring some new ideas to the table, and we hope that other colleagues, other members of the International Syria Support Group, are going also to show their responsibility, because we have been able to cover a very serious road in creating the Vienna Group, in having two or three successful meetings of the Vienna Group, passing Resolution 2254 here in New York when ministers were here. So we need to continue making that progress. Well, people need to wait. We are preparing some ideas about how to move things forward, including as far as the ceasefire is concerned.
Does the President believe that the BYD should participate on February 25th? That the Kurdish groups, as you were saying,
We do believe they represent, if I'm not mistaken, 15% of the population. So for them to be excluded, it's rather strange for me that this is the position of Turkey, because if they want to maintain the territorial integrity of Syria, and the efforts of the International Syria Support Group are based on the premise of the territorial integrity of Syria, they need to be in favor of involving them in inter-Syria discussions, because if they are alienated, then, you know, they may have certain thoughts about their future. So this is a very strange position, another element of a very aggressive Turkish policy with regard to the Syrian conflict.
Terrorist groups with your airstrikes. Can you specify which groups are you targeting in your airstrikes in the Aleppo area? And could you respond to the criticism that the airstrikes have led to a humanitarian siege of Aleppo?
Well, the specifics, as you know, our Ministry of Defense and our general staff are working with a high degree of transparency, in contrast, incidentally, to the U.S.-led coalition, because I haven't heard much from them about their bombing campaign. They do daily briefings, and they explain there what the targets are, what the intentions are. So I encourage your colleagues in Moscow to follow those briefings closely, and more importantly, to report those briefings fairly. That has been missing, I think.
Mr. Ambassador, do you mean that the Geneva talks started prematurely, and where should the talks start based on what you just said?
No, they did not start prematurely. I mean, actually, they started a little later than what we were hoping for, because you remember the target date was the 1st of January. Well, of course, you know, in diplomacy, things sometimes shift, so we didn't mind Stefan de Mistura taking additional times and calling in the parties to the talks in late January. But we're really hoping that with all the support of the international community and with 2254 behind him and, you know, with the international community seemingly being tired at last of this conflict, to say nothing of the fact of the tragedy of the Syrian people, that they should stay there and they should start talking. And there is nothing in 2254 about preconditions. Yes, it talks about humanitarian situation, it talks about the need for ceasefire, but those are interrelated aspects. And now to turn back to the idea of the need to have certain, you know, preconditions, I think this is something which is complicating the situation, but now we need to look forward to the discussion which will take place in Munich on 11th of February.
French ambassador just said that Mr. de Mistura specifically said that the military campaign by the government forces were backed by Russian Air Force was the reason for the halt of the talks.
He did not.
That true?
He did not say that. I say my good friend François de Latre should have stayed through the meeting rather than, you know, put words into de Mistura's mouth. Stefan de Mistura was at his diplomatic best. And he was not making those statements. I don't want to speak on his behalf. He was expressing the hope for, like, better environment for the talks. But anyway, I'm not going to repeating what Stefan de Mistura has to say. But there was no reference from him to, you know, Russian airstrikes or the Syrian offensive.
A few ideas.
Ideas. Did you present it on the
Security
Council?
Not me, but Russia. But Russia, and we'll bring them to Munich.
Bottom line, Ambassador, what do you think of the possibility of success on February 25th?
Well, you know, I like to be optimistic. We cannot afford being pessimistic. We need to start pushing. Some countries, unfortunately, you know, they are pushing in a different direction, but even members of the International Syria Support Group. But, you know, I think very highly of the cooperation between my Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and Secretary of State John Kerry. I have no doubt that they are going to do their utmost in order to re-energize once again the International Syria Support Group and make sure that the meeting will be important and useful, and the talks will be resumed.
Mr. Ambassador,
Thank you. You said that Mr. de Mistura was encouraged. Could you give us some details about why he seemed encouraged and what he's planning to do between now and the 25th
I did not say he was encouraged. I said I was encouraged that he thought that talks could start even before February 2025. Again, I don't want to speak on behalf of Stefan de Mistura. He was hoping, of course, as he always does, for greater support from the international community. So we'll see in what form and shape this greater support can. To me, this greater support, one of the elements of this greater support, is to make sure that nobody is going to pose problems for forming a more representative delegation of the Syrian opposition, that they will not allow those people from the Ariad group who came to Geneva, didn't even come to the negotiating table, to try to monopolize the talks on behalf of the opposition. You remember, one of the reasons the Geneva II failed, the valiant effort of Lakhdar Brahimi, was that, you know, this national coalition came in and did not really represent, you know, much of the opposition, or did not represent many important elements of the opposition. In fact, the same thing happened during Geneva I as well. So we should not allow that negative experience to be repeated here. So there is one thing. Another thing, which, and you know, we, of course, we keep trying, talks or no talks. We keep talking about humanitarian assistance. In fact, I had another good meeting even after our previous discussion of the humanitarian situation in Syria with people from World Food Program, and they said they might be interested in participating in our airdrops to Deir ez-Zor, you know, which we have been doing for the past few weeks, and which have delivered hundreds of tons of humanitarian supplies. We are discussing those things with the Americans, cooperation in delivering humanitarian supplies in Syria to hard-to-reach areas. So we are doing all those things, but they are not easy because very often the Syrian government sees things in a sort of bilateral manner. For example, one of the things I heard today, why wouldn't it be wonderful for those besieged areas, those sieges to be lifted? And among other places, Deir ez-Zor was mentioned. I would love to see those sieges to be lifted, but ISIL, if I'm not mistaken, is besieging Deir ez-Zor. What is the guarantee that they are going to do the right thing? I think it's very hard to expect that. So we need to work those things through. But if we keep saying that for the talks to start, we need to have those to see those things done, then we are delaying the talks, and those talks ultimately is the best place for those discussions to continue. We cannot discuss those things on behalf of the Syrians. We cannot do that. Sometimes we are trying to do that, but ultimately they themselves need to decide what they can do in order to alleviate the humanitarian situation in their country. Please.
Ground troops to Syria.
Well, I hope it was not an announcement. I hope it was just one of those press reports, which, as we all know, very often are not true. I think that would be a very dangerous development, very dangerous. I think they have enough on their hands in Yemen, so they shouldn't be really venturing into other dangerous places.
Do you equally blame the United States for the failure, for its hesitation, half-hearted involvement? They were not in so
strong. I heard some criticism from the U.S. delegation, I did say a number of things about U.S. policy, but I don't want to go into it now, because this is not the right thing to do now. The worst thing is to start recrimination among members of the International Syria Support Group, especially key members of the support group. We need to have even stronger concerted effort in order to overcome the problems we are faced with Syria. So this public recrimination is wrong. You want to ask a question?
Are you willing to stop airstrikes, and when, and under what conditions?
Well, I just mentioned that. You know, we started our airstrikes after airstrikes had been conducted by the U.S.-led coalition for months. In contrast to the U.S.-led airstrikes in Syria, ours are fully legitimate because we got the invitation of the Syrian government. Our airstrikes are just part of the fighting context in Syria, which includes military moves by various terrorist groups, various groups which some consider a moderate opposition, and of course the Syrian government. So do you expect just us to say, that's it, we are stopping, but the rest of the things continue? I think what we need to look at is the overall situation and a ceasefire, which is also an important element in 2254. For example, I think it's very hard to talk about a serious ceasefire if the border between Turkey and Syria is being crossed all the time by terrorists and weapons are being brought in to Syria from Turkey, which feed into the fighting forces of the terrorist groups and opposition. It's not for nothing that President Hollande of France raised the need to block the border between Syria and Turkey, and we support that idea. So all those things need to be looked at for the ceasefire to be accomplished. And of course, it's very strange that our colleagues for a long time were saying that for the ceasefire to happen, there must be some political progress. For political progress to take place, there need to be political negotiations. Now they are saying that the ceasefire must take place before political negotiations. So, you know, let's be honest with each other, and let's go to the negotiating table, and let's discuss all those things. And if they believe that we are doing something wrong, let's pick up our proposal for cooperation. As soon as we started our bombing campaign on September 30, we invited the United States and their coalition to join the coordination cell we have in Baghdad, where we coordinate things with Iraq, Syria, and I think also with Iran. Or any other place, they refused. And now coordinate, really coordinate, so that we knew whom we are bombing and whom we should not be bombing. They refused. So this is a mistake. This is for whatever ideological reasons they have. Maybe they were afraid that if they do that, this is my personal guess, the coalition would really go into coordination. Some of the links between some members of the coalition and terrorist groups are going to be revealed. This is my only explanation to their refusal, perfectly logical offer of cooperation. Thank you very much.
Ambassador, have you seen a draft on JPI?
You have just listened to the informal comments to the media by the Permanent Representative of Russia to the United Nations. For further information, you can visit the page dedicated to the war in Syria at Equipo Niscor's website. This program has been produced on February 12, 2016 at Radio Niscor's studios in Belgium.